back to Justin Kaufman and Extension 720 on 720 WGN.
Celebrating Lit Fest tonight, the Printers Row Lit Fest. This is one of my favorite nights of the year. We did this on the download a couple years back. Get a chance to talk to several different authors and really celebrate what I think is one of the best festivals in Chicago, which is coming up this weekend in Printers Row. Well, if there's anyone who knows, does more for the Chicago literary community than my next guest, I'd like to meet him. Nina Barrett is owner of Bookends and Beginnings, a bookstore in Evanston. It's the bookstore she dreamt about opening ever since she moved to Evanston in the late 80s. But Barrett is more than a bookstore owner. She's a longtime Chicago author. Her latest is called Leopold and Loeb Files, an intimate look at one of America's most infamous crimes. But she's not just an author. She's an advocate for Chicago's literary community, serving on the planning committee for the Lit Fest back when it used to be called the Printers Row Book Fair. She's part of a panel this weekend called Chicago by the Book, Writing That Defines a City. The award-winning author and radio personality, she won two James Beard Awards for her excellent Fear of Frying series back in public radio days. Nina Barrett is a perfect guest to kick off our annual Lit Fest extravaganza. Nina, welcome to Extension 720.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, there's so much we can get into. I guess we start right away with the early days of the Printers Row Book Fair, which I like. It's more endeared to my heart to call it the Book Fair. But the let's talk about those early days. What was the idea of trying to bring literature to Printers Row?
Well, I didn't come in right at the very beginning. So I actually arrived at the fair the first time as an author. I believe this was in the mid-90s, and I came and I gave a talk, and I was relatively new to Chicago myself, so I was just so impressed by the fact that there was this sense of community, that there were all these events, that people, that out-of-town authors were coming, and so I asked to be on the planning board. And for many years, for the years before the fair was owned by the Tribune,
right.
It was run by the Near South Planning Board, and there was a committee of people from community organizations from that area, and my role on the committee at that point was to organize events for Chicago writers. And I think one of the things I have definitely seen over the course of the last 25 years, is how much the Chicago literary community has really evolved into a community.
So, but when you were starting and working for Chicago or bringing Chicago writers to the book fair, it was less of a community? It was more disparate? What's the difference now in 2019 than, say, back in 1994, 1995?
There is more of a sense of connectedness, I think, among, well, first of all, I can speak for bookstores. So I own a bookstore in Evanston called Bookends and Beginnings. But there are about 25 really vibrant independent bookstores in the Chicago area. All of us do events all the time. So yes, for Lit Fest, we have this one day where there's 2 days of incredible programming. But, you know, if you were to look at, for instance, the list of authors who are going to be at Lit Fest this year, the vast majority of them have been at my store. They've been at many of the other stores. So we all kind of run an ongoing Lit Fest all the time that I hope people are taking advantage of.
Yeah, right, of course.
And I think that in itself, this big resurgence in independent bookselling that we have definitely seen in the last 6 or 7 years, you know, there's a thing called the indie bookstore renaissance. It's not a myth. The numbers back that up. And Chicago's sort of the poster community for that.
Let's talk about that because, you know, reading your bio and the about page and everything on the website, there's just this concept of if you would have opened Bookends and Beginning, say, 10 years ago, it wouldn't be as much of a success as it is now. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I know why. I mean, I wouldn't have opened it 10 years ago. In fact, you know, that's about the time when I made a decision that I was going to get out of the book business and I was going to also get out of the writing business.
Why were you making that decision at that time?
Because, Barnes & Noble and Borders had really doubled down everywhere. And they drove, something like 2,500 independent bookstores out of business during their prime years. And I do remember I was For a long time, I was writing books and also moonlighting at Women and Children First. Mm-hmm. And I remember what happened in the independent bookselling community because of the encroachment of these big chain stores. And it really, there was a period where people thought independent bookselling couldn't survive anymore with that kind of competition. And then, of course, Amazon came along and made it even worse.
You would think that. Especially with, you know, obviously the story of the big chains versus Amazon is well documented, right? Mm-hmm. This is a story where these two Goliaths kind of go at each other and the big chains lost, meaning Amazon's away. But it doesn't seem that it would make an independent book place thrive. So how do you get from those two fighting it out, you would think that that'd be the end of it, to a resurgence, to customers coming back to the bookstore?
Well, so a couple of things happened. One is that once Amazon came along, that was trouble for the book chains.
Sure.
They had to rethink their business models. You know, we saw them invest in things like their own e-readers. Didn't work. The whole concept of reading electronic books didn't pan out the way people thought. Seven or 8 years ago, people thought that by now, 80% of book sales were going to be electronic and 20% was going to be print, and exactly the opposite thing has happened. So meanwhile, you know, Borders goes out of business. Barnes & Noble has really disinvested in their print books. They have put all the money into their e-reader. They have all this merchandise.
Right.
And so suddenly, now an opportunity does open up for the kind of older bookstores that we remember that have a much more interesting, diverse stock of books, not just your bestsellers, and that are willing to be a home for literary events to bring that.
And it's really almost not unlike we see with coffee shops and other places where it was underestimated how important these places were for community. I think at the time there was this thought that Starbucks or Barnes & Noble or Borders would be the future, and there was no need for these places. But as communities recognized the needs of their communities, they recognized that independent coffee shops and bookshops, those were the places that were sacred. Those were the places that needed to stay.
Well, that's something that's still evolving, and it isn't as if it's not a struggle every day. So, of course, if you are offering people online books that are cheap and you know, just to make the point that Amazon never did need to make money selling its books. So one of the reasons that Amazon was able to offer all these cut-rate books is that they were being supported by investment income.
Right.
And so they've really perpetuated the idea that a book isn't worth the price that is printed on it, because they didn't need to sell it for that. So those of us who are still in the business, who are selling our books full price, we also need to sell our customers on the idea that we are providing something that adds value to what they're getting when they go online and click.
Right. How do you sell a customer these days? What, to come into Bookends and Beginnings in Evanston, how do you sell? What's the value to come in, pay full price, but to come into the bookstore?
Mm-hmm. Well, for one thing, I think that as retail has gotten more and more homogenized, so for instance, you go into a Barnes & Noble in, you know, Chicago, and it looks just like the Barnes & Noble in LA, and it looks just like the Barnes & Noble in Kansas City. Enough retail has gone in that direction that I think part of why people buy so much online is that going into stores is boring, and people are really sick of these places. The cool thing with an independent bookstore is my store has a very unique look. It feels really homey. It's got antique furniture and oriental rugs, and the shelving is all wood. You don't walk into my store and really feel like this is a place that's trying to sell me stuff. Mm-hmm. You walk in and you feel like you're in somebody's
home.
Like
it's a neighbor, right.
And it puts people at ease. It, I think, encourages browsing. We had a whole funny conversation at the beginning about should we even have Wi-Fi? And I said, well, let's have weak Wi-Fi. So, you know, if you really need it, you can use it. Yeah. But the last thing we want to do is encourage you
to... everybody in their devices, right?
Yeah. So that's my store. So it's an appealing browsing environment. But on the other hand, if you go into any of the other indies in Chicago, you find a different environment.
The other part of this, too, is just the publishing industry as a whole, because, you know, you kind of have to part and parcel with it's sort of a yin and yang relationship with the companies that are publishing books, and they've gone through a lot of struggle, and I think of Milt Rosenberg's show here, Extension 720, where authors were coming through Chicago to publicize it almost to the first stop. They were saying, we got to go to Chicago, then we're going to go on tour, we're going to send these authors out. Today, it's much different. They don't send the authors out. They seem to be more efficient and more penny-pinching when it comes to promotion of these books. How does, when you're trying to develop relationships with your customer and try to get them in the room for events, how do you do that when the industry around you seems to be shrinking?
Well, I am very, very fortunate to be in Evanston, because an awful lot of authors come from Evanston, live in Evanston, came from Evanston originally, or their sister-in-law lives in Evanston. So we've people just have dropped into our laps. We did a wonderful event with Ron Stallworth, who was the original Black Klansman and wrote the memoir that the movie was made, you know, and that was a family connection. He'd been in our bookstore with some family on a previous trip, and he loved it, and he said, I want to come back and do an event. So we had him. You know, Sarah Rule comes from Evanston, and Chicago is very rich that way. So it's not the same thing as, you know, living somewhere out in the middle of nowhere where you really do have to either pay for an author to fly in, or but we have a rich literary community here, and we also do a lot of things with our native literary population. We routinely have a poetry night on the last Friday of every month, and that is the Rhino Poetry Journal, which is headquartered here, and a lot of local poets show up for that. You know, we work a lot with local authors. It's a great literary city.
Nina Barrett's my guest. She is the owner of Bookends and Beginnings in Evanston, the bookstore there. And she's also going to be at the Printers Row Litfest for a panel on Saturday, Chicago by the Book, Writing That Defines a City. And we're going to talk about that and talk about your work as an author coming up here right after the break. Nina Barrett, my guest here on Extension 720. Stay with us. WGN. It's Extension 720. I'm Justin Kaufman. Nina Barrett's my guest. She's going to be at the LitFest on Saturday for a panel called Chicago by the Book, Writing That Defines a City. Nina is a longtime literary advocate. She's an author. She's also the owner of Bookends and Beginnings, the bookstore in Evanston. We were just talking about that. You know, you wrote the book, The Leopold and Loeb Files, An Intimate Look at One of America's Most Infamous Crimes. And that's what you're going to be talking about a little bit in this in the panel coming up tomorrow. And I want to talk about that, because what attracts you to this story? This story is well known, but it seems a little bit, I don't want to say out of left field for you, but it's just a different kind of thing that you've done in the past.
So there are layers to this, because actually what I'm going to be talking about in the panel is an essay in the Chicago by the book. And that is, it's an essay about the novel Compulsion, which was a novel that was based on the Leopold and Loeb murder by Meyer Levin. And if you want me to talk a little bit first about how I got involved in this, I sort of backed into it, but about in 2009, I created an exhibit for the Northwestern University Library based on a collection of documents they have that really shouldn't have survived from the 1920s, because normally they would have been just thrown in the garbage after the court case was over. But in this case, because the court case was so notorious, people just kind of took them home and then they resurfaced, and a lot of them have ended up in the Northwestern collections. So, for instance, this is a famous case that began with a kidnapping, the ransom note, the original ransom note that was sent to Bobby Franks' father survived and is in that collection.
Wow.
There are, so for people who don't know what this case is, it was two very supposedly brilliant University of Chicago students named Nathan Leopold and Richard Loeb, who decided that they were going to kidnap and murder a 14-year-old boy who turned out to be Bobby Franks. And even though they knew they were going to murder him from the beginning, they were still going to then send a ransom note to his father and collect a $10,000 ransom, because to them, this whole thing was sort of an intellectual thrill, and they just wanted to see if they could get away with it.
One of the most famous murder cases in Chicago history.
Yeah. And so here's this incredible collection of not just the ransom note, but there's a complete transcript of their interrogations once the police caught on to them, leading to their confessions. So there is their description of what of the murder and what they were thinking, all in their own words. There are really detailed psychiatric reports. So the most famous, probably the most famous attorney in U.S. history, Clarence Darrow, ended up representing them. He commissioned these psychiatric reports because originally he thought he was going to use an insanity defense. So here's all this incredibly detailed material on their families and how they grew up and what they were thinking. And then there's a 5,000-page court transcript. So which is Clarence, basically this dramatic, it reads almost like a screenplay of Clarence Darrow at the height of his powers trying to get them saved from the death penalty. So I did this exhibit. We put the material out there. We kind of, I used the materials to tell a story, but you, in an exhibit, you can't reach into the exhibit case and open these things up and read in.
And that's really what you've done here with
so
this book.
So that's where the book came from, is it's like it translates this exhibit into a book so you can go to this case, which is one of the most, it's been fictionalized, there have been movies, there have been plays, and it's been done in nonfiction. And my thought was, it's just usually embellished in some way, but I wanted to be able to take readers back into the rooms where all this stuff was unfolding.
It's fascinating. Nina, for you to, at this panel, to take on the essay, the compulsion essay, which is really about Leopold and Loeb, why? Why showcase that in this panel tomorrow or Saturday? Sorry.
So I'm part of a book, and the purpose of the book, Chicago by the Book, is to pull together 101 essays about different literary works and publications that have really been essential to defining who Chicago is in everyone's imagination. And it's an incredible collection of materials. I don't think anything like this has ever really been done before. When we talk about what is the literature of Chicago, I think this book is the best thing we have so far to talk about what is the literature of Chicago. I was asked, everybody in the book was commissioned to write an essay on some book that had been chosen because it was significant. So I was asked to write on compulsion. Compulsion is a fascinating, fascinating book because a lot of people consider it to be the first nonfiction novel, even before Truman Capote's In Cold Blood. A lot of it is lifted directly out of the materials that are in my book, the court transcripts, like the character who's Clarence Darrow in the book speaks Clarence Darrow's exact words. But it was written by Meyer Levin, who actually was a Cub reporter as the trial was unfolding. He was also at the University of Chicago, so he knew a lot of the contemporaries of Leopold and Loeb. So he did early reporting on the case, and then he went on and he had a spectacular literary career. But 30 years later, this case was still really bothering him, because the one thing about this case, it's a real why done it. We always knew who did it, but nobody can wrap their head around why two brilliant,
even today,
rich, socially prominent kids like that would ruin their lives to do something as evil and stupid as murder a 14-year-old boy for kicks. Nobody gets that. So Meyer Levin, 30 years later, really wanted to probe this. He went to Leopold in prison. Leopold was in prison and proposed that they collaborate on writing Leopold's memoir.
Wow. Well, that'll be part of the Chicago by the Book, Writing That Defines a City panel, which will be on Saturday at 11 o'clock at the Harold Washington Library Center in the Video Theater Room. It's 400 South State Street. That's a great room. Nina Barrett, the owner of Bookends and Beginnings, the bookstore in Evanston. She's also the author of Leopold and Loeb Files, an intimate look at one of America's most infamous crimes, and also a one of the early programmers of the Lit Fest, which back in the day was the book fair. Nina, thanks so much for coming in on Extension 720, being my guest tonight. I really appreciate it.
I think it's so wonderful that you're doing all this coverage.
It's good to see you, too.
Yeah, you too.
All right, we'll continue our conversations around Lit Fest. Coming up, a look at the Guild Complex, the Guild Literary Complex, which is celebrating a 30th anniversary and 20th anniversary of their famous anthology, Power Lines. That's coming up here in the 8 o'clock hour, so stay with us.